how do we make the creation of AI agents easier? Do we need an operating system for that? Smith OS thinks so, and Alexander DeRitter joins me. He's the man behind it. Let's find out on this bonus episode of The Business of Tech.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Alexander, thanks for joining me today.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
Now, I want to start with sort of some basic stuff, because as I was listening to what you're working on, you're in the AI space, but you've positioned it at what you're working on as an OS. You've got Smith OS. So explain to me a little bit, like, why do we need another operating system?
Yeah. So, like Windows gets you programs that you can run, right? iOS, like iPhone, gets you apps. Smith OS runs agents. So it's an agent operating system. It's a platform to run agents on. Now, building agents, you can do this with code. You can spin up your own servers and so forth and so on. You know, programs and apps, you can code them in assembly language as well. Why don't you do that? It makes no sense. You need an abstraction layer. You need something that makes it easier and faster. You need something to handle the networking, something to handle the communication, something to handle the memory. So many little things that you don't really have to worry about as a program or app maker. Well, Smith does the same thing for agents. It handles all of that stuff, so you can go straight into the business logic.
Interesting. So the basic idea then is that we can create agents for specific purposes and then deploy them in organizations, however is appropriate. And you give the infrastructure tools around it. Am I sort of understanding it right?
Yeah, we provide all of the hosted services for that agent to function, APIs, but you can deploy them to your own domains. And then from there on, we have what we call embodiments, right? Because an agent, right? It's like a soul without a body. So you need to put it somewhere. Where could that be? Well, if it's a brand agent, you want to put that agent where the customers are. You want to put it into Google. You want to put it in Microsoft. You want to put it in Amazon. You want to put it in Siri, etc. ChatGPT. That is what we call embodiments. But you could also perhaps want to deploy the agent into, let's say, a team environment where it's not publicly accessible. So maybe it's joining your Google Workspace or Microsoft Teams or Slack or Discord. Those are like that you treat them more like they're your digital colleagues. And you could also deploy them as a background server process that is just sitting there waiting for, I don't know, a new Jira ticket, and then go get to work if they see something assigned to it.
Gotcha. The basic idea here then is to help organizations get these agents out into the right places by providing all of the kind of basic infrastructure tools. Am I making,
yeah,
very simplifying well it a little too much?
I mean, you're hired. I mean,
well, I try and figure it out. So then the next logical step, particularly for my audience, is in many businesses, they're, particularly as we move towards the smaller end of the market, they're generally working with organizations like managed services providers, IT services companies. How do you think about those implementers when you're thinking about a solution like Smith OS?
Yeah, so Smith OS needs a system integrator to deploy. It's like this, right? How many people in the world are building apps compared to how many people in the world are consuming apps? There's a big gap in numbers, right? It's a tiny fraction of people who make them, and millions and millions, if not billions, yeah, you can say billions of users who use them. So same way with agents. not everybody is cut out to build and manage and update and agents and, you know, get down with the client and figure out the process and how to best solve a solution and architect that. Not everybody's cut out for it. Now, what Smith has done, it's lowered the bar so much in terms of difficulty of entry into that, meaning that people with even traditionally not like coding backgrounds can use our visual no code drag and drop interface with prompt engineering to do spectacular things. But still, it's still not for everyone. I wouldn't ask my mom to go and build agents, for example, but she would use them. And so that's the same way that this would be rolled out in a managed service provider context and enterprise context as well. It's not so much about consolidating your AI. It's about aggregating your intelligence. So the people in your organization basically aggregate it into agents and so forth. Everyone in the organization can access it through these aggregated intelligences. And so this is the way you solve internal process problems. This is the way you make your team more productive. This is the way you solve challenging client problems that you could previously not imagine solving.
Interesting. Now, one of the things that I've posited, I'd like to get your reaction to this premise. So one of the things I think is going to be a space, particularly for this world of consultants that are, you know, MSPs, IT services companies, advisors, you know, that are helping small businesses, is that there's a lot of different models and a lot of different techniques out there as ways to do it. And if I compare this to the winemaking process, this is an interesting, is if we think about this from, you need grapes, the different grapes create, result in different wines. And, you know, the guys over at Techmeme Ride Home and did a really good job of structuring and saying, like, they think that the models will end up being a lot like the grapes, and the expertise of the app developers and the people pulling it together will be like the winemaker. And I've extended that and said, okay, that makes some sense to me. And that also then means that the IT services companies and MSPs are like the sommeliers, because they're matching created wines to customers in a correct way. I'd like to get your sort of reaction to that way of structuring and thinking about it as somebody who's spending a lot of time on the tools.
I mean, at the analogy, I like structurally, it's sound. Like the idea that you combine different things and then you have the experts weigh in and weigh and compare and so forth and use and consume that process, it makes sense. Where I prefer an analogy that's more like, specifically for Smith and what we're doing, I like it more like an orchestra conductor. You know, you got the violins, you got the drums, you got the harp, you got the trumpets. I see the internet like the orchestra, all the instruments. And what you need to do is you need to orchestrate intelligence. So some orchestration is going to involve one or more AI models. They each have their different strengths on timbre, like their sound. So different, you know, different musical instruments have their different flavors and sounds. So you have that. Then you have your data sources. Then you have your process, your music sheet that you follow. So you combine data, APIs, AIs, and process, and you orchestrate it. So Smith is the, well, Smith puts you, the agent engineer, in the role of conductor and allows you to efficiently orchestrate that intelligence. In the case of this, the winemaking example, that's wonderful. You, for example, have the quality of the grapes that goes into it. You know, a very advanced wine might use a mixture of different ingredients, right? So, same way Smith allows you to use a mixture of different AI models into one solution in one bottle wine, right? One type of solution. And then finally, it's not just about creating it. If only billionaires can come and listen to my orchestra, right? It's not so accessible. So we need to make sure these agents can be deployed everywhere and become accessible for them to be really useful.
So how are you thinking about this in terms of the ethics and frameworks to apply? Because, you know, there's a lot of open space, and I'm not a doomsayer on this, but at the same time, I also recognize that, you know, this technology needs to be applied in a thoughtful way to get good outcomes too. And if we don't put ethical boundaries and frameworks around it, like, bad things can happen. How do you think about that problem of ethics and frameworks in AI?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very interesting topic. And I've put a lot of thought into it. Actually, I think it is as complex as, let's say, the Second Amendment in the United States, right? Because on the one hand, you want people to have access to these technologies, but then you also count on the individuals that have access to it to do that in a responsible way. And you're acknowledging that bad actors can use such tools in an irresponsible way that can threaten our safety or democracy in other ways, and health and so forth. So from that perspective, is this tension between, you know, utility for good and utility for bad. On a macro level, on a societal level, so not just the individual person's responsibility, but on a governmental level, It also comes down to how the fruits of the labor of not the worker, but the AI agent or AI or other technology is used in a way that it elevates the and benefits the people that such government regulation serves. And that is a very complex topic that has, you know, hundreds of dimensions and people and things to consider and so forth. But here's what I would say with that. I think it's actually easier to solve this than many other problems that we have in society and regulation and so forth. And here's why. That typically speaking, we think of how wealthy a nation is by something like GDP per capita, right? So now imagine that for every capita, every human, we had 10 or 100 AI agents helping them be more productive. And let's just hypothetically say that scales and we literally increase our GDP by 10 or 100x. But the capita remains steady. What that means is that there is 10 or 100 times more wealth generated, productivity generated for the same amount of population. If I'm telling you to make a budget, but your budget increases by 10 or 100x in the next few years, you shouldn't have a problem taking care of my basic needs. You should be able to see certain things. Maybe my answer gets a little bit too long now, but it's really an interesting question. So here's some things that we would consider normal in the future that we may not consider normal now, right? Today, we expect the government to deliver basic services for us like roads and schooling and in some countries, healthcare, right? But we do not expect the government to, I don't know, get us a new car or get us a house. Why? Because it's, you know, the balance of taxation and government size and everything is always like, we're surrendering some of our rights in exchange for public good in a society we want to live in. Right? So we pay taxes so that there's police, so that in general, we can have a safe neighborhood. Because without a safe neighborhood, I can't do my business and I can't make money. So the trade-off with the government is always of such a nature where we trade some of our wealth and so forth. And in exchange, we get some service back. Now, here's where this gets interesting. In the future, in a, you know, GDP 10x, 100x scenario, certain services become so affordable to render that totally makes sense for the government to start providing that to the people as just a right of the country you live in, right? And I know the word right is like politically charged, but let's just say, call it a government service. And the only way you can do that is if those particular services cost come down so much that it basically becomes a no-brainer. And so when I talk to people, both left and right, you know, and you ask them questions like, do you care about eliminating poverty in this country? There's not a single person, left or right, that will contest you. We're all in favor of those things. So what I'm saying is that when it comes to regulating AI as a government, it is a lot easier to regulate the benefits of AI when everyone can expect 100x improvement. Now, the trick is this. We need to make sure that 100x increase in GDP, that does not benefit only like a tiny percentage of the population. But when everyone is making so much more as a country, the government has an easier time to distribute that without affecting. I mean, if you already have $100 billion in the bank, what does one more billion make a difference? So today I would have to take from your $100 billion. Tomorrow that might be $1 trillion, and you'll never have enough time in your life to spend that kind of money. So it's not the traditional, like, I'm going to take from you. We're talking about net new 10x, 100x opportunity for society. And we're talking about a society that fundamentally can have the basic needs of every human met. And then we move to a society where work shifts more to something like, I do this because I love my reputation. I'm passionate about this and I want to do this. And you know, as an entrepreneur, I mean, you have a podcast, and I met a lot of people listening here are the same way. Many of you would do and are doing what you do, even if you have no guarantee that you'll be paid. Many bootstrap startups are in those shoes. We just believe in something. And if we have our needs met, our families are happy, we're healthy, we can afford everything we need, then money just doesn't become the important driver of that anymore. And so this is the regulatory environment, government-wise, we will need to pay attention to that. And of course, protecting bad actors, Second Amendment style discussion, debate, how we regulate that. It's very complex, the safety aspect.
Now, there's an intermediate step at some level. So if, you know, and we have directionally lots of different ideas on the way that we might go with a long-term societal version of it. But the interim step is there's going to need to be some corporate government governance and policy and framework implementation in organizations to make sure that they're not getting too far ahead of themselves. How do you think about that problem in the, you know, as you're thinking about the direction, how do you think about that problem in the near and short-term future?
Yeah. So at SmithOS, we've done some thinking and we've implemented some methods to go about it and some principles. Like, one of them is called constrained alignment. So the alignment issue is where an AI can get so smart, you don't really control it, and it can be unpredictable and do things you didn't intend for it to do. We solve that problem by orchestrating intelligence. Every component in the workflow is only as smart as it needs to be to solve its own task. And it does not have the right to break free from that workflow and go and do other things that you didn't intend for it to do. So for businesses, I think it's an absolute disaster to take Skynet and plug it into your system and say, go. Like, that whole concept of auto GPT, where AI decides for itself how it's going to solve problems and then has full freedom within the power of the AI model that you give it to go and publish things to your website or things in that. That is a bad idea. You need to constrain that intelligence. So that's one principle, constrained alignment. The other thing that we do that's really important is, we have been building AI agents for a while, at least since March of this year when GPT-4 came out and it started being able to call functions, something before was impossible. So anyone that's saying AI agents, we're not talking about the same definition if before March. You couldn't build AI agents under that definition before then. But we've built a lot of such agents using such techniques since that technology became available. And what you end up with is, whether you code it by hand or use frameworks like LangChain, you end up with so much code. And something to keep in mind, these AIs are what you call non-deterministic. They're fuzzy. Every answer is slightly different. So you cannot account for every possibility in the multiverse in your calculations. So what you end up with, such code bases that are completely unmanageable. You something happened and it was wrong. How do you go through all that code to go and figure out where exactly it went wrong? It's like an impossible task. Believe me, I have been there. I have tried it. So what we did is we built some of the world's most robust debugging tools. We created a visual orchestration. So what does that mean? It's like you can visually see, oh, it's trying to do this, then go in here and here. And here's the exact inputs and outputs. And by the way, after 1,000 customers used it, here are the exact logs of every single thing that went on in this process. And you can analyze that and say, ah, this is where it went wrong. I need to adjust this component. I need to constrain it better. And so that creates transparency, auditability, and, you know, constrained alignment, so that you can actually be in control of the ethical application and constrained rolling out of AI responsibly in your organization in a way that you're in control and you can drive and make that better and better over time. But people need the tools to be able to do that, because we're all talking about it. But in practice, if you tried built agents by code, you quickly learn that the debugging, transparency, and auditability in every solution out there in the market, save for Smith, that's why we built it, is not meeting those enterprise needs or standards of responsible and ethical use of AI.
Interesting. Well, you've given us a lot to think about. So if people are interested in learning more and trying out the platform, where can they get more information?
Our website, smithos.com, Smith with a Y. And you can also follow me on LinkedIn, Alexander de Ritter. AD Ritter is my handle. LinkedIn or Twitter is the best way to reach me personally.
Awesome. Alexander, this has been fascinating, and I really appreciate you joining me today.
Well, thank you for having me. Thank you. Thank you, Dave.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The Business of Tech is written and produced by me, Dave Sobel, under ethics guidelines posted at businessof.tech. Like the content? Support the show at patreon.com/MSPradio, or buy our Why Do We Care merch at businessof.tech. If you want to reach our listeners, visit MSPradio.com/engage.
Part of the MSP Radio Network.